An Osho Talk. Tao, the Golden Gate. Talks on Koswan's The Classic of Purity. Volume 1, Number 3.
The first question. What is the secret of remaining happy and married? It is impossible. It has never happened. It cannot happen in the very nature of things. Marriage is something against nature. Marriage is an imposition, an invention of man. Certainly out of necessity, but now even that necessity is out of date. It has been in the past a necessary evil, but now it can be dropped. And it should be dropped. Man has suffered enough for it. More than enough. It is an ugly institution. For the simple reason, because love cannot be legalized. Love and law are contradictory phenomena. Marriage is an effort to legalize love. It is out of fear. It is thinking about the future. About the tomorrows. Man always thinks of the past and the future. And because of this constant thinking about past and future, he destroys the present. And the present is the only reality there is. One has to live in the present. The past has to die and has to be allowed to die. The really intelligent person never looks back. He never bothers about the past. That which is finished forever. And he never thinks of the future either, because that which has not come yet, has not come yet. And he knows that whenever it will come, he will be capable of responding to it. So why ponder about it? Why make ready-made answers for questions which have not even arisen? And all your ready-made answers are going to be irrelevant, because life goes on changing. A life remains always a surprise. It is unpredictable. But man thinks that he is being very clever by preparing for the future. You love a woman, you love a man. But what about the future? Tomorrow, the woman may fall in love with somebody else. If she can fall in love even with you, why not she can fall in love with somebody else? You know it. You are aware of it. That she has fallen in love even with me. So there is every possibility she can fall in love with somebody else. So something has to be done to prevent her in falling in love with somebody else, so that your tomorrow is safe and secure, so that you can use her tomorrow too. Whether love remains or not, at least you will have the physiology of the woman. You are not much concerned with her soul, because law cannot prevent the soul, but law can create barriers for the body. Its reach is not beyond the body. Law can prevent her. Law can condemn her, can punish her in many ways. And another thing, you are also afraid not only of the woman, you are more afraid of yourself too. You can fall in love with this woman. You can fall in love with somebody else. You know that your mind is constantly thinking of other women. You know there is every possibility that tomorrow you may lose interest in this woman. In fact, it is almost a certainty, not just a possibility, not just a probability. And then you are afraid of yourself. You may escape, you may run. And you want to cling, because this woman is taking care of you. She has been a comfort to you. She has been a consolation in your life. She has been, in many ways, a mother to you, a nourishment. You are afraid to betray her. You are afraid of your own mind, of your own unconscious. It can take you anywhere. And you have promised her that you will never leave her, that you will always love her, that you will love her forever, life after life. You are afraid of breaking your promises. Your ego feels that to break those promises will mean only one thing: you will never be able to forgive yourself. It will remain a heavy weight on you. It will create guilt for you. And the same is the situation from the side of the woman. Hence it has been a necessary evil. And men and women have agreed to plan for the future. Afraid of themselves, they have taken support from the law, from the society, from conventions, from respectability. They have created 1001 barriers around themselves, so they remain together. But if, and that if is not a small if, it is a big if. Something happens tomorrow, then your life will become miserable. And something is going to happen tomorrow. Tomorrow is not going to remain the same. Life never remains the same. Not even for 2 consecutive moments. Nothing can be said about the future. It has remained unknown, unknowable, unpredictable. No astrology can help, no palmistry can help, no tarot card reading can help, no I Ching can help, nothing can help. Man has tried every possible way to make something certain out of the uncertain future, but nothing can be done. The nature of the future is unknown. And it remains unknown and open. So you close yourself to all possibilities. You close all the doors, all the windows. But then you will feel suffocated. And you will feel angry. And you will feel constantly in conflict. With the woman you had loved once, you will feel angry. For the simple reason, because now it is difficult to get out of this prison. You have imprisoned yourself. Now the only way to go on living in it is to make yourself as insensitive as possible. To become as unloving as possible. To become as false as possible. To be as dead as possible. Hence people die very soon. They may be buried after 40 years, 50 years, but they die near about 30. By the time their love starts dying, they die. Because life is love. But love is not law. Life is not law. Life is not logic. Love is not logic. Life is basically insecure, and that is the beauty of it. Hence, I don't see that with the coming age, with the new maturity man is attaining, marriage can exist anymore in the same old way. It has to become more fluid. That means it has no more to be an institution. People will live together. They need each other. Men and women are half of one whole, their need is intrinsic. Together they become one whole. Together they are complementary to each other, but they will live only because of love, not because of any law. And they will live together out of freedom, not out of bondage. And with the disappearance of the institution of marriage, the whole structure of society will change. It cannot change otherwise. Because once marriage disappears, many things will disappear automatically. Family will not be the same anymore. Family will be replaced by communes. That is inevitable. And children will not belong to persons, but to the commune. Hence, there will be not much problem. Because children has been a big problem. What to do with children? When people separate, the children are left in a limbo. Something has to be done about the children. And marriage has persisted for the simple reason that children has to be protected. They have to be helped. They are helpless. And it is your responsibility. Love becomes duty, responsibility. And the moment it is duty and responsibility, it loses all poetry. It becomes pure calculation. Then it is a compromise. Then you have somehow to pull it. Then you start dragging your life. A great revolution is on the way. And with the disappearance of marriage, that revolution will become possible. Once children no more belong to persons, they will have more generosity. They will be more human. They will not be Hindus and Mohammedans and Christians, because they will not belong to certain parents, and they will not be conditioned by the parents. They will belong to the commune. And once children belong to the commune, they will have a bigger experience of people. One child may come in contact with many women as mothers, aunts, with many men as fathers, as uncles, with many children as brothers, sisters. Right now, the experience of the child is very limited. Each child is brought up by a certain woman. The impact of that woman remains hanging on the child's consciousness for his whole life. It becomes an imprint. And he is always searching for the same woman. In every woman he falls in love with, he is really looking for his mother, which he cannot find. Where he can find his mother? There are not two persons alike. He will never find his mother anywhere. But he is looking for his mother in every wife, in every beloved. And the same is the case with the woman. She is looking for the father, in every husband, in every lover. And they cannot find them. And that is their idea. The woman's idea of man is nothing but her idea of the father. And the man's idea of a woman is nothing but his idea of the mother. They will never find them. Hence, there will be frustration. Hence, there will be always despair, misery, failure, anguish. If a child is brought up by many women in the commune and comes in contact with many men and many women, he will not have a certain idea. He will have a more vague vision. He will not have a certainty how a man should be or a woman should be. His idea of a woman will contain many pictures. And then there is more possibility of finding a woman who can fulfill him or a man with whom life can be a contentment. One of the greatest misery is that you are looking for someone you cannot find. Hence everybody will seem to be falling sad. Nothing will ever satisfy you. And because you will not be confined to one family, you will not carry the rotten heritage of the family. Otherwise, the Hindu parents will make the child Hindu. And a Hindu child is bound to be against the Mohammedans, against the Christians, against everybody else. And so is the case with the Jews and with the Christians and the Mohammedans. If in a commune the child moves with many people and feels attuned with the whole commune, for example, in this commune, you can look at Siddhartha. He lives absolutely freely, such a little child, with such freedom. He has no attachment to the mother or to the father. He makes friendship with grown-up people. He starts living with them. He has so many friends. Men and women and all kinds of friends, children, grown-ups. He's really getting the idea of so many people that his vision of humanity is bound to be vast. He had asked me, he was living in a kid's house where only kids live. He asked me, I want to live with real men, not with kids. Enough is enough. I have lived with kids long enough. So I sent him to live with Govindas and other sannyasins. And they complained that he comes sometimes 12 o'clock in the night and sometimes 1 o'clock, sometimes 2 o'clock. This is too much. He goes to parties and to dramas and to the disco and he is disturbing us continuously. And he has possessed the whole room. As if the room belongs to him and we are just living in his room. He has put all his things all around the room. All his toys are everywhere. So please, they ask me, remove him. I told him to go to his mother, Nirisha, to live with her. He said, that is the last place I want to go. But if you say so, I will go. He has been forced to go to live at least for a few days with the mother. And he has been living with many families, with many couples. Wherever he goes, he makes friendship. And there are so many friends. He is never out of money. He asks everybody. Sattva has been once a lover to Nirja. Now that love relationship is broken. But the love that has grown between Sattva and Siddhartha has continued. They are still friends. Sattva has still to give him money. He comes every day. Today I need 5 rupees, 10 rupees. One day Sattva said that I don't have any money. Then he said, you can ask me. And he brought 5 rupees from somewhere and gave it to Sattva. Why don't you ask me? I have so many friends. I can bring as much money as you want. Now this child will be a totally different child. He has lived with Jews and with Christians and with Hindus. He will not be conditioned by anything. He will not have any conditioning. He will have a vast territory of being available to him. That's my idea how all children should grow. Then there will be no ugly religious conflicts, wars, bloodshed, no ugly fanaticism, no fascist ideologies in the world. These are all byproducts of family, and the family depends on marriage. In fact, if the family disappears, nations will have to disappear. Religions will disappear. States will disappear. Churches will disappear. That's why nations, churches, everybody is in favor of marriage. And they all go on praising marriage like it's something holy, something divine. It is the ugliest thing on the earth. And they go on telling people that without marriage, where children will get love, they will get more love. Nobody is going to prevent their parents to love them. But they will be available to others too. They will not be dependent. They will start learning independence from the very beginning. They will have a certain new feel of freedom. And that's what is needed. The whole human history has been full of religious wars. For the simple reason that everybody becomes conditioned. And once you are conditioned, it is very difficult to uncondition you. I know the difficulty because that's my whole work here, to uncondition you. It takes months, years, and you struggle hard. You resist in every possible way because your conditioning means your ego. You ask me, what is the secret of remaining happy in marriage? I don't know. Nobody has ever known. Why Jesus remained unmarried? If he had known the secret, he knew the secret of the kingdom of God. But he did not know the secret of remaining happy in marriage. He remained unmarried. Mahavira, Laosu, Chuangtasu, they all remain unmarried. For the simple reason, because there is no secret. Otherwise these people would have discovered it. They could discover the ultimate. Marriage is not such a big thing. It is very shallow. They fathomed even God. They could not fathom marriage. Socrates got married and he suffered his whole life. He did not discover through marriage the secret of remaining happy. He simply discovered that it would have been better if he had not got married. But in Greece, there has never been such incidents like Jesus, Laosu. Jesus had yet to come 500 years after Socrates. Socrates was a contemporary of Laosu, Mahavira, but he knew nothing about them because the world in those days had no communication. So whatsoever was conventional happened in his life. Muhammad married not one woman, he married 9 women. Many times I have been asked, what about Muhammad? I know the secret of Muhammad. I don't know the secret of remaining happy in marriage. But if you have 9 women, they will fight amongst themselves. And you will be free. Muhammad managed it. And he has said to his followers, marry at least 4 women. So Mohammedans are allowed to marry 4 women. 4 women are enough to fight amongst themselves, and the husband will be spared. Krishna did the best. He married 16,000 women. Now it is very easy to get lost. 16,000 women. Who will take note of Krishna? Where he has gone, where he is, there will be so much noise and fight and in that cloudy, smoky atmosphere. Krishna can escape anywhere He even can sit in the middle of it and meditate, and nobody will bother about him. They will be all concerned about each other's saris and each other's ornaments. Buddha got married, but then he escaped. He had a beautiful wife, Yasodhara. But he escaped. He came back home only when he became enlightened. After 12 years. Yes, if you are enlightened, then you can be happy anywhere, even in marriage. But no enlightened person has ever been known to get married after enlightenment. Two friends meet. Hello, Luisa. How is your great love? It is over, she replied sadly. Over? How come? We got married. Two friends were talking. I have placed an advertisement in the newspaper looking for a wife, says one. Did lots of women write back? Asks the other. Just a few women, but lots of husbands. The wife left home for the fifth time, and the husband rushed to place an advertisement in the newspaper. It read, "Do not come back and all will be forgiven." It was a wise old woman who, when people asked her why she never married, would answer, "Why marry? I have a dog who snores, a parrot who speaks only dirty words, and a cat who stays out all night. What do I need a husband for?" The jealous husband hires a detective to find out if his wife betrays him. After a few days, the detective comes back with a movie showing his wife and his best friend swimming, dancing, making love, having fun. While watching the movie, the husband keeps saying, "I can't believe it. I can't believe it." But says the detective, annoyed, "I am giving you proof of it." "No, it is not that," replies the husband. "I just can't believe someone can have so much fun with my wife." In heaven, everybody is quiet and silent except for Paolo, who keeps saying, "What peace here, what peace here." Even Saint Peter gets tired of him, and so one day he sends him to purgatory. Even there, though, Paolo keeps muttering, "What peace here, what peace here." Everybody gets so tired that they decide to send him down to hell. But even in hell, among the flames and the devils, he keeps uttering, "What peace here, what peace here." So Beelzebub calls him and asks him the reason of his behavior. "Well, Beelzebub," replies Paolo, "you would say the same if you had lived for 50 years with my wife." Love is enough. Live only out of love. It may last long, it may not last. But don't be worried whether it lasts long or does not last long. Even if it is there for a single moment, it will give you the taste of eternity. And there is every possibility, if you are not afraid, it may last longer, because fear is poison. It poisons everything. If you are not worried of the tomorrow, you may live 2 days so totally that out of that totality, a beautiful tomorrow will arise. But if you are afraid of tomorrow, you may destroy today. And once today is destroyed, from where the tomorrow is going to come? Live fearlessly. That is one of my fundamental messages to my sannyasins. And live dangerously. Don't compromise for conveniences, for comforts. It is better to live in uncomfort, but to live, rather than to be in comfort and dead. For that you can wait in your grave. You will be perfectly comfortable and out of danger. Nothing can happen there. There is no danger. You cannot die again. No illness can happen. Nobody can leave you. You can't go bankrupt. Nothing can be stolen from you. You will be perfectly in peace. You must have come across gravestones, and almost on all graves it is living, live in peace. What else is there? One man died. He had made his own gravestone, a beautiful artistic thing, because he was not relying on his wife. She was such a miser. She may put some ordinary stone. So he had purchased the most costly marble, asked the best artist to make rose flowers on it. And he had written on it, "Live in peace." When he died, his wife discovered that he has not left any money for her. When the will was opened, there was only one sentence, that I was a wise man, hence I have spent all that I had. I have not left anything for anybody. The wife was furious. She went to the grave with the artist and told the artist to add few words more. Live in peace till I come. But don't be worried, even wives can't come in the same grave. They will have their own grave. And even if they come, they won't recognize you. You won't recognize them either. You can live in peace in the grave, in absolute security. But while you are alive, be alive. Accept all insecurity. In that very acceptance, insecurity disappears. And without any compromise on your part. Love totally. But don't ask for permanence. Only fools ask for permanence. And remember one thing. If you ask for permanence, you will get only false things. Only false things are permanent. Real roses are bound to wither sooner or later. But plastic roses are permanent. They don't wither away. But they don't have any fragrance either. They don't have any life either. They have only the appearance of a rose. Marriage is a plastic rose. Love is a real rose. Grow real roses in your life. Of course, they will wither. So what? You can grow again. You can go on growing. You can go on creating more and more love. Sharing more and more with more and more people. And this is my experience. And whatsoever I am saying out of my own experience that if you love totally without desiring for any permanence, even the impossible is possible. Your love may remain for a long period, maybe your whole life. But don't ask for permanence. In that very asking, you have disturbed the whole thing. You have moved from the real to the unreal. Live totally. Totality is my key word. And up to now, permanence has been the key word. You have been told that your love should be permanent, only then it is real. If it is not permanent, it is not real. That is sheer bullshit. A real love has nothing to do with permanence. There is no necessary relationship. It may happen only for a moment. It may be just like lightning. But that does not mean that lightning is unreal. Because it happens only for the moment. The rose flower opens in the morning, by the evening, the petals have dropped, withered away, gone back to rest into the earth. That does not mean that the rose flower was unreal. But you have been told again and again by the priests that if you are really looking for reality, then the touchstone is permanence. They have moved your mind from reality to permanence. And once you become attached to permanence, you are bound to purchase something false. And you lose track of the real. the real is changing, constantly changing. The unreal remains the same. And you have to be available to the constantly changing. Even if for a single moment love happens, be total in it. If you are total in it, the next moment will come out of this totality. It is possible. I cannot tell you it is certain. I can only tell you it is possible that the next moment will deepen your love. But it will not be the same. Either it will deepen or it will disappear. But it will never be the same again. No two moments are same and cannot be same. And that is the beauty of life. That's the incredible adventure of life, that it is always a surprise. It is always unexpected. If you live totally, things may deepen. But remember, when things are deepening, they are not the same. If you think of permanence, you have missed the target. So don't ask me, what is the secret of being happy and marriage? Just I can tell you the secret of being happy. Marriage is irrelevant. If you live together with somebody out of love, out of gratitude, good. If it goes on happening your whole life, good. If it disappears one day, depart from each other in deep gratitude, in the remembrance of the love that has been once there. It has enriched you. Rather than clinging to each other in anger, frustration, in rage, and being violent to each other and destructive, it is better to depart with grace. One should know how to fall in love, and one should also know how to fall out of it gracefully. The second question. My Jeevis parents are not happy that I have become a sannyasin. What should I do? Jesus has said, unless you hate your parents, you cannot follow me. Now the words are very strange, and they come from a man like Jesus. They are shocking. One cannot expect them, at least from Jesus, because he says, love your enemies as you love yourself. Not only that, he even says, love your neighbors as thyself, which is far more difficult than loving your enemies. But when it comes to parents, he is very clear. He says, unless you hate your parents, you cannot follow me. Why? He is so hard on parents. But it is nothing. If you think of Gautam the Buddha, he used to ask his bhikkhus, his sannyasins, his disciples, have you killed your parents yet or not? A man like Buddha, who is absolutely non-violent. Jesus is not so non-violent. At least he eats meat. He is not averse eating fish. Buddha is a vegetarian, absolutely vegetarian. He is the greatest propounders of non-violence on the earth. And he asks again and again to his disciples, have you killed your parents yet or not? Of course, they don't mean literally, neither Jesus nor Buddha. But their words are significant. What they really mean is, a great message. It is metaphoric. You will have to understand the metaphor. They are not concerned with the outer parents, your father and mother. They are concerned with your inner imprints that your mother and father have created in you. It is not the outer parents who are dominating you. What they can do? You are here and they may be thousands of miles away. Somewhere in Germany, what they can do, they cannot dominate you. But you have something inner. You have inner ideas, inner reflections, imprints, impressions of your parents. And those ideas go on dominating you. If they don't like your being a sannyasin, then your conscience will feel guilt. You will feel that you are hurting your parents, that it is not good, that this should not be so. Something has to be done. But parents are always against anything that is new. Buddha's father was not happy with him. He was very unhappy. He was angry at him. Buddha had to escape out of his kingdom because he was afraid that he will be caught. Because detectives were sent to catch hold of him. He was the only son of his father. And the father was getting old. The father was 70 when Buddha escaped from his home. The father was afraid who is going to possess his kingdom. And stories were coming to him, rumors, gossips of all kinds, that he has become a monk, that he begs, that he has become a beggar. And of course, the old king was getting very angry. that what is this nonsense? The son of a king begging for what? He has everything. Why he should beg? And he is begging house to house, walking barefoot, and is surrounded by other beggars like him. What he is doing? He has betrayed me in my old age. Naturally, he was angry. But the real anger is somewhere else. The anger is that he has gone against his religion, his ideology. He has gone against all that the father represents. He has gone against the ego of the father. Jesus' parents were not happy with Jesus either. They were Orthodox Jews. How they can be happy with a son who is preaching strange things and who is talking in such a way as if he knows more than Moses? Because Jesus was saying again and again that it has been told in the past to you. But I say unto you that that is wrong. It has been told to you that if somebody throws a brick at you, answer him by throwing a rock at him. But I say to you, if somebody hits on one of your cheeks, give him the other cheek too. Now this was absolutely against the Jewish idea of justice. This seems. Almost anti-Jewish. Because even the Jewish God declares in Talmud that I am a very jealous God. If you go against me, I will destroy you. And he destroyed two cities completely. What happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the Jewish God has done 3,000 years before. He destroyed two cities for the simple reason because people were not behaving according to his idea of morality. They were becoming immoral. He destroyed the whole cities. Now all the people cannot be immoral. And even if all the people are immoral, they cannot be immoral in the same degrees. There were small children also. They cannot be immoral. They don't know anything of morality or immorality. There were very old people also. They cannot be immoral. There were ill people who cannot get even out of their beds. What immorality they could have been doing. But he was so angry that he destroyed the whole cities just to teach a lesson to humanity. And this young man, Jesus, is saying, forgive. He was going against all ideas of Judaic religion completely. He was teaching people new concepts, new visions, new ways of approaching God. The parents were angry. Once it happened, Jesus was teaching, surrounded by his disciples was a crowd also. His mother came. And somebody informed him from the crowd that your mother is waiting outside and she wants to see you urgently. Jesus is reported to have said, tell that woman, not my mother. He says, tell that woman that nobody is my father and nobody is my mother and nobody is my a relative. All my relatives are those who are with me. Those who are not with me, I have nothing to do with them. Tell her to go away. It seems harsh. It seems cruel. But there is a reason in it. These are all symbolic stories. I don't think it really happened. I don't think Jesus will say, tell that woman. But it says something. You have to drop the idea of your father, of your mother, from your innermost core. Only then you become mature. If you carry that idea, you remain childish. You never become mature. And no father, no mother ever wants you to become really mature. Because maturity will mean that you will become free. All the so-called religions have taught you to respect your parents for the simple reason that if you respect your parents, you will respect the past. You will respect traditions. You will respect conventions. If you respect your father, you will respect God the Father. If you don't respect your parents, then naturally you are cut off from tradition and no church can afford it. I will not say to you, don't respect your father and mother. I will say to you that you can respect your father and mother only when you are completely free of your inner impressions of father and mother. Otherwise, your respect is false, pseudo. You can love your father and mother only when you are completely free of them. Otherwise, you cannot love them. You will remain angry with them. Nobody can love anybody unless one becomes free of that person. If there is dependence of any kind, love remains only a facet. Deep down there is hatred. And every child hates fathers and mothers. Every child, without any exception. But a respect is imposed from the outside. Just look within your unconscious. Look deep down within yourself. And you will find a great revengeful fire. You want to take revenge with your parents. You are angry. Because the way you are, they are responsible. It is the way they have brought you up that is making you miserable. It is the way they have conditioned you that is making you crippled and paralyzed. Hence, naturally there is hatred. I would like you to become aware of it so you can drop it. Because whatsoever they have done unconsciously. They need to be forgiven. forgive them. Jesus says, hate your father and mother. Buddha says, kill them. I say to you, forgive them, which is far more difficult. Forgive them because whatsoever they have done unknowingly. They were conditioned by their parents and so on and so forth. Even Adam and Eve were conditioned by their father, God. Conditioning begins from there. God is responsible for conditioning Adam that don't eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge. That don't became a great attraction. That is a negative way of conditioning. And if it is said emphatically, don't do a certain thing, a great urge arises in you to experiment, to experience it. Why? Why God is so much interested? Because the tree of knowledge cannot be a bad thing. Knowing cannot be bad. If you become wise, what is wrong? Wisdom is good. Knowledge is good. Certainly Adam must have thought within himself that God is trying, that I should not become as knowing as He is, so that I remain always dependent on Him, so that I have always to go for His advice, so that I can never live on my own. So I have always to be just a shadow to Him. He does not want me to be free and independent. That is a simple logical conclusion. And that's what the devil did. He argued the same thing. He told Eve, why he had chosen Eve, not Adam. Because if you pursued the wife, if the wife is convinced, then you need not worry about the husband. Every advertisement expert knows it. Hence all advertisements are meant for women. Once they are convinced, then nobody can unconvince them. At least not their husbands. They have to follow suit. They have to do, because the woman will become a continuous torture if you don't do it. The devil was the first advertisement expert. He is the pioneer. He is the founder of the whole art. He did not bother about Adam. He must have known that all husbands are hand-picked. Why bother about them? Persuade the wife. He persuaded her. And of course he was convinced because the logic was so clear. He said God has prohibited only because He does not want you to become like gods. Once you eat the fruit of the tree of knowledge, you will be like gods. And He is jealous. He is afraid. And it will be foolish on your part if you don't eat. Be like gods. And who would not like to be like gods? Once the temptation is there, it was impossible to resist. But the whole conditioning comes from God Himself. It was a negative kind of conditioning. Your parents are not responsible really. An unconscious person cannot be held responsible. He functions unconsciously. He does not know what he is doing. You have to go within yourself and cleanse yourself of all the impressions that your parents have put upon you, negative and positive both. Then there will arise great compassion in you for your parents. Great compassion. And great gratitude also. Because whatsoever they have done according to them at least, thinking that it is good. They have not deliberately done anything wrong to you. Even now, if they are against your sannyas, if they are not happy with your sannyas, it is because they think you have fallen into wrong hands, that you have fallen from their traditional heritage. They are afraid you may go astray. You may suffer later on. You may repent one day. They feel for you. Their love is unconscious. Hence, you need not listen to them. But you are not to become angry with them. You have to understand them. You say, my Jewish parents are not happy that I have become a sannyasin. First, they are Jewish. That is one of the oldest religions in the world. There are only two old religions in the world, the Judaic religion and the Hindu. Older a tradition is, greater is its weight. It crushes people more. Anything new is light. My sannyasins can walk light-footedly, almost dancingly. But 5,000-year-old tradition creates a great weight. It is a long past. They could not forgive Jesus. How can they forgive you? And Jesus has not become my sannyasin. In fact, he had not gone outside the tradition. He remained a Jew. He was not a Christian, remember, because there was no Christianity at that time. Christianity was born out of his death, out of his crucifixion. Hence I always call Christianity Christianity. It has nothing to do with Christ. It has something to do with the cross. That's why the cross has become the symbol of Christianity. Far more important than Christ. They could not forgive Jesus. And he was never gone outside the tradition. Of course, he was talking things which looked a little strange, little new. He was bringing new light. He was clearing the mirrors of the Jewish consciousness from the old dust. But they have not been able to forgive, not even now. I have not come across a single book written by a Jew in favor of Jesus. Still they think he was wrong. Still they think that it was right to crucify him. Still they think he was a criminal. And to become my sannyasin is certainly far more dangerous, because it is going totally out of all traditions. It is not only changing one tradition for another. It is dropping the very traditional mind itself. It is dropping being traditional as such. It is becoming non-traditional, unconventional. It is pure revolution. And they are afraid, naturally. For many reasons, Jews are afraid. And there is some attraction between me and the Jews. I have attracted so many Jews here that sometimes I myself wonder, am I a Jew? Or what is the matter? Because Jews are not so easily attracted to anybody. They were not attracted to Jesus. They are not attracted to anybody else. Why? They have come to me. I have touched something deep in them. In fact, they have suffered from tradition more than anybody else. That's the reason why they have become so much interested in my vision. Because I am anti-traditional. They would like to get rid of it. A Jew and a black man are sitting next to each other on the train. Suddenly the Jew realizes that the black is reading a Hebrew magazine. He keeps silent for a while, then whispers to him, "Listen, friend, is it not enough to be a black?" Your parents may be afraid. Is it not enough to be a Jew? Now you want to suffer more? Because to be with me is going to be dangerous. Freedom is far more dangerous than anything else in the world. Freedom is fire. It burns your ego. And because it makes you egoless, it hurts many other people's egos, and they all become enemies to you. Then Jews are very worldly people. It is the only religion which is very worldly. There are two kinds of religion, the worldly religions. Jews represent the worldly religion. And there are the other worldly religions. For example, Buddhists. Buddhists will be against me, because to them I will look a little worldly. And to Jews I will look a little too otherworldly. I am both. I am a bridge. My sannyas is a synthesis, because I don't divide this world and that world. To me both are beautiful. And one has to live in both the worlds together, because they are not separate, they are inseparable. The very idea of dividing them has been a great calamity. Jews are more interested in money than in meditation. Now, thinking that you have become a meditator, they will be afraid what you are doing. This is time to earn money. This is time to get rooted in the world. Don't waste this precious time. According to them, when you are young, you can do something. As you will become old, you will be less and less able to make money, power, prestige, to make a name in the world. You are wasting your time here. Even those who are here, if they are Jewish, the hangover continues. One of the sannyasins went to the office few days before in an euphoria. Must have touched something intangible in meditation. May have been silent here in the discourse. May have had a glimpse of something unknown. In those moments, even if you are a Jew, your Jewishness disappears. She went to the office, told that she wants to donate to the new commune $100,000. After 5 minutes, she went back and said she wants to cancel it. She was asked, what happened? Yes, we will cancel it. It was you. Nobody had asked you about anything. You came on your own. Now, just after 5 minutes, what has happened? She said, I went to see Amitabh, one of my friends. And he said, are you a fool or something? Go immediately and cancel it. He scolded me. Now, Amitabh, is a Polak Jew. That is the most dangerous combination you can find, Polak and Jew. Of course, he loves me and loves me tremendously. He has been here. He is one of my topmost therapists. He lives in my house in Lao Su. But hangovers are hangovers. Very excited, Isaac calls David, come immediately, David. I have an incredible bargain. 300 trousers for only $50. David runs to Isaac, where he finds the pile of 300 trousers. He looks them over and then says to Isaac, but Isaac, these trousers have only one leg. No one can wear them. Listen, David, replies Isaac, besides the fact that there are people with only one leg, I already told you, we have to sell them, not to wear them. A Jew arrives in Chicago from Israel. He is coming to America for the first time. It is raining, so he stops at his shop to buy a pair of shoes. Mindful of his father's advice, when the clerk asks $20 for the shoes, he starts bargaining, $10. "That is impossible," replies the clerk. "10 are nothing," is the Jew's reply. So the clerk consults the manager, then says, "Okay, 10. "No," replies the Jew, "5. Again the clerk consults the manager, "Okay, 5. "No, 2, replies the Jew. "Listen," says the clerk, tired of him, "just take these shoes and get out." "No," exclaims the Jew. "No? You don't want them?" asks the clerk incredulously. Says the Jew, "I want 2 pairs. Your parents must be worried. What you are doing here? Such an intelligent guy like you, wasting his time meditating? Have you gone crazy or something? Sitting silently doing nothing? Is this a way a Jew is supposed to behave? Time is money. Don't waste it. And moreover, whether your parents are Jewish or not, parents are parents. They feel offended. They feel offended by the very idea that you think you know more than they know. That you are trying new ways. That you are trying to be wiser than your parents. A Jew arrives in heaven and God in a very compassionate voice asks, "What happened to you?" He says, "I was broken hearted when my only son, my pride and my joy, announced that he had become Catholic. I felt this terrible pain in my chest. You should not have despaired so much. Even my only son did the same. And what did you do, my lord?" "I made a new will and testament." So what they can do? They will make a new will and a new testament. Let them make it. Learn to forgive them. I will not say to you, hate them. Because hate is not freedom. If you hate somebody, you remain attached. Hate is a relationship. Love is freedom. Love is not a relationship. Hate is a relationship. That's why those who live in relationship live in hate. Not in love. Love is freedom. Love them, then you are free. But to love them, you will have to cleanse yourself totally. I will not tell you like Gautam the Buddha, kill them. Because killing is not going to help. Understand them. Be compassionate. Killing will be doing something in a hurry. There is no need to be in a hurry. And parents have gone so deep in you, they are not only in your blood and bones, they have entered in your very marrow. You cannot kill them easily. It is impossible. You will have to commit suicide if you want to kill them. Because only then they will be killed. They have entered your being. You are part of them. They are part of you. But through deep understanding, you can be free of them. A liar has succeeded in acquitting a Jew who has killed his mother, his wife, and his sister. Before separating, he says to the man, "As you still have a father, I will just say, see you soon. I will not suggest that. My methods are far more subtle." What Jesus said and what Buddha said are very primitive methods. What I am saying is far more sophisticated. It has to be. It is 20th century. Forgive them. Understand them. And the whole question is within yourself. It has nothing to do with the outer parents. If you can relax within yourself, and if you can feel compassion for them, because they have suffered in their own way, they have wasted their whole life. Now they want to waste your life, because that is the only way they know how to live. Great compassion is bound to arise in you. And out of that compassion, maybe you can be of some help to them. Because compassion functions in a very subtle way. Love is the greatest magic in the world. I will not say to you, go and listen to them and follow them to satisfy them. That will be wrong. That will be destroying your life, and it will not help them either. You remain yourself, and yet you have to be compassionate and forgiving. And if you happen to go there, remain compassionate and forgiving. Let them feel your compassion, love, your joy. Let them feel your celebration. Let them feel what has happened to you through sannyas. Let them see the difference. Buddha's father remained angry till he came to see him. Even when he saw him for a few moments, he was so angry, his eyes were so full of anger that he could not see. Buddha remained silent. The father went on insulting him, saying that you have been a deep wound to me. You have almost killed me. Why you have come now? After 12 years, I have waited so long. You have not been a son to me, you have been an enemy. Buddha listened, did not utter a single word. Then father suddenly became aware that the son has not spoken even a single word. He asked, "Why are you not speaking?" Buddha said, "First you say everything that you have carried for all these 12 years. Cathart. Unburden yourself. Only when you are unburdened, you will be able to see me. One thing I would like to say to you, that you are talking to somebody else, not to your son. The man who had left your palace has not come back. He has died. I am a totally new man. I have come with a new consciousness, with new love, with new compassion. But first you unburden yourself, otherwise your eyes are so full of rage, you cannot see me. Let your eyes be clear. The father was trembling with anger. Slowly he cooled down. This very answer cooled him. Tears were coming to his eyes out of anger. He wiped his tears, looked again. Yes, this is not the same man who had left his palace. This is a totally different person. Of course, the face is the same, the figure is the same, but it is a totally new being. The vibe is new. He fell into the feet of Buddha and he said, "Initiate me too, because now I am too old. Death is coming closer. I would also like to taste something that you have tasted. And forgive me and forgive all my anger. I have not known what is happening to you and what has happened to you. It is good that you have come. It is good that you remembered me, that you had not forgotten me. So whenever you go back, let them first cathart. And remember, they are German parents, so they will cathart longer than Buddha's parents." Listen silently. Don't get angry. Remain meditative, calm and quiet, and your coolness will transform them. If you really want to help them, and each sannyasin should want to help his parents, because they have given you birth, they have brought you in some way the way they could. It was not possible otherwise. Whatsoever they could, they have done. And they have done for your good. Whether it proved good or not, that is another matter. But their intentions were good. So whenever you go back, remember to help them. The last question. Don't you ever get tired with us and our stupidity? I rather enjoy it. Moreover, I have to do something. And this is the only thing that one can go on doing forever and forever. Jesus was bored, so he went to God, his father, and asked him, "Dad, give me something to do. I am bored." "Take a file and smooth the top of the Himalaya," said God. After 7,000 years, Jesus came back. "And now what can I do?" he asked God again. God gave him a spoon and told him to empty the Indian Ocean. After 7,000 years, he was back again. "It is done." "And now?" he asked God. Tired, God looked at him and said, "Listen, Jesus, go down to earth and convince the men down there to love each other. That will keep you busy for eternity." I am not a priest. It is not my duty. Otherwise, one is bound to get bored and tired. It is my joy. It is my love. The Pope is redecorating his summer residence of Castel Gandolfo. When the work is finished, he comes with the chief decorator to see the results. Everything is perfect. When he arrives to his bedroom, the decorator, to give the final touch, hangs a beautiful antique 12th century cross just over the bed. "Ah, no, 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 my son," exclaims the Pope. "I have already told you not to put anything here that reminds me of my office." This is not my work. This is my joy. This is my play. I am really enjoying it. A Russian cosmonaut comes back from his space travel. Brezhnev receives him. "Tell me the truth, comrade. Did you meet God up there?" "If you want the truth, yes, I found him," replies the cosmonaut. "I thought so," replies Brezhnev. "Now promise never to reveal this to anyone." After a few months, the same cosmonaut is received by the Pope. When they are alone, the Pope whispers to him, "Now, my dear son, please tell me, did you meet God up there?" Faithful to his promise, the cosmonaut replies, "No, unfortunately, not to your sanctity." And the Pope sadly replies, "I thought so." "Now listen, promise me never to tell this to anyone." Enough for today.
The responses to sutras and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.